everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life. Because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. It's true. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing, the writing life, as well as video interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. Our new issue is coming out the first of the month, just a few days, and you'll be able to check out my conversation with the wonderful Lori Frankel. Lori Frankel has written three very interesting books. The most recent got a lot of attention. It's a great conversation. She's an unusual writer, has a few unusual tricks that she uses. Check it out. It'll be up, like I said, the first of the month, July 1st, at authormagazine.org. And as always, we are funded by the fabulous Pacific Northwest Writers Association. They've been supporting writers all the way from pen to publication since 1955. They're still doing it. If you live in the Northwest, and it doesn't even matter if you live in the Northwest. If you're a writer, you can join the PNWA, and we have these great monthly meetings, and no matter where you live, you can attend those meetings virtually or just watch them virtually. It doesn't matter. So check it out, PNWA.org, PNWA.org. Check it out. Okay. Oh, I've been looking forward to this conversation. This woman's book arrived on my desk. I get a lot of books. And I said, what's this one about? Oh, I do like memoirs. I cracked it open, and I read the first page, and I thought, I got to interview her. It's true. That's how it went. So her name is Jen Waite, and she is the author of the international best-selling memoir, A Beautiful, Terrible Thing, A Memoir of Love and Betrayal. She's also published some articles and essays in Scary Mommy, Upworthy, Today Parenting, The Huffington Post, and Romper, but she's with us now. Yes, she is. Jen, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, it is my pleasure. Like I said in my intro, and this is true, I cracked open your book. What's this all about? And I don't always do that. And then I cracked it open. I was standing up, and then I was sitting down. And then I was reading, and I was like, I'm going to interview her. That's just all there is to that. So congratulations on how this book's been doing. It must be a delight.
It is many things.
Well, yeah, yeah. Well, we're going to give some of our readers or listeners have probably read this book, but some of them haven't. So we're going to get to it in a second. Actually, no, let's get right to it. I take that back. Let's get right to it, because it's an unusual story. There's an unusual way you told it, which I'll come to. But first, because you've probably done this and can do it better than I, tell the readers, the listeners, a bit about what this story is. Just tell them what it's about.
Ooh, yeah. Okay. Well,
deep breath.
Yeah, exactly. I know no matter how many times I tell it, it's still something that kind of shocks me while I'm telling it. But so it basically started right after I gave birth to my daughter. She was about 3 weeks old, and I was married to my husband, who at the time was, you know, the love of my life, my best friend. And we were living in New York, and she was about 3 weeks old. I remember it was pretty late at night, and I sat down in my living room and opened our family computer that we shared and just opened it up. It was the first time that I'd used a computer since giving birth, and so I kind of felt proud of myself for...
Oh, I didn't
catch
that.
Because I had been so stressed out and anxious, and she was very colicky as a newborn and was really crying almost nonstop. So there was just a lot going on. And so I remember having this thought, oh, I'm almost back to a normal person or doing adult things. I mean, that was not at all true at 3 weeks. But I remember having that thought and being really proud of myself. And then looking at the screen that came up, and my husband's Gmail account was on the screen. And I kind of just scanned it quickly. And it was just a lot of work emails. And then one of them stood out, and the subject line was, I think, appointments or apartments. And the thread, because you can see that first line on the actual screen. And it just said, thank you for your time last week, but my girlfriend and I have decided to go with another apartment. And immediately, like, two things happened. I kind of laughed, like I remember laughing out loud, I think probably to try to almost convince myself that it was in some
right.
way funny or some kind of strange miscommunication or misunderstanding. But then I also just completely, I mean, my world, like, I froze
right.
and I felt really, like, sick and that something was wrong. So that was basically the tipping
That's
point,
the
I guess, of that was the very beginning. And then the unraveling is basically the rest of the memoir. And I almost wrote it in real time, which makes it a little bit unique because I was writing very close to while it was happening. Yes,
oh,
I did. I sat down and started writing about 3 months out. And so I was still literally uncovering things in real time. And yeah, and I didn't sit down
to
write a
Jen.
Memoir.
You have no idea.
Was,
like, that is like the hardest way to do it. It really is. I know a couple
people. Well,
the
strange thing for me is that it almost came out like it was like an out of body experience. It just wrote itself.
I
hate it when other authors say that because I'm like, no, that's not true. But it really felt like it did. Like it had to just come out of my body, and I didn't set out to write a memoir. I just set out to like get it out of my body.
Right. Well, and I should say to our listeners that so this wasn't just a about an affair. It her husband
right.
was really I don't like to use this word. I've never, but was kind of by clinically a psychopath.
Right, right.
Is that really? In
that's,
other words,
that's the like
the
diagnosis
term.
That I came to,
right.
and you know, I'm not a mental health professional. I am considering pursuing that path now, but I did a lot of research, and there are just a lot of indications that I found, you know, throughout my research that kind of align him with that personality
right.
disorder. And so, you know, whether you want to call him a psychopath or just kind of a toxic person,
right.
that was my diagnosis. But at the end of the day, it's definitely he is someone that I am glad to not be in contact with anymore.
Well,
let's put it that way.
Yeah, well, part of what made it compelling is that, so, you know, because there's a lot of, you know, people write about the ends of marriages a lot, and it's fine. I think it's worth writing about the way we write about death
right.
or children or anything. But was his devotion to the lie and his ability
right.
to absolutely be committed to it, which is unusual.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people cheat, but
yep.
they kind of crack up under it. But he was really committed
right.
in how he would sort of become whoever he was with. So he seemed to be on a
right.
different plane from the average
right.
cheating guy.
And that's what I think in my mind just differentiated him from just someone, you know, male or female. A lot of us cheat, or, you know, in long-term monogamous relationships, it's just a fact that a lot of people do cheat for various reasons, and obviously not all of them are psychopaths. But
right.
when my ex-husband refused to, I mean, he never came out with the truth or told me any really, you know, inkling of the truth, I realized that something deeper was going
right.
on, and just the ease with which he was lying and being presented with basically cold hard facts and still, you know,
right.
lying and gaslighting and all that just made me feel like, okay, either I'm insane, which I really did believe at some points. I really
sure.
believed him that it was me, I was the one who had the problem, or there's something deeper going on. And so that's really why I started to research, you know, what is happening? Who is this person?
Right. Well, it's such an interesting story because the issue of the truth, and just like you said, sort of, am I crazy? Because I hate to bring this up, but sometimes I go through it when I look at political news and I think, wait a minute, I thought I knew what reality
right.
was, but there's I don't want to get into that, but that's how I felt sometimes. And that's what I thought of. And every once in a while, mm-hmm. when I hear somebody else saying what I thought was the truth, it was such a relief because we all know we can believe anything if we really want to. Right. I mean, we
exactly.
can convince
yep.
We all know we can convince ourselves of things. So and I was with you. Like, I wasn't sure, like, when you were telling it, did he really cheat on her? I mean, I know he must have, but did
right.
she? Because I was with you. So you did
right.
a good job of taking me along with you.
And I think that for me, that's something that has actually become something that I think about more and more post, you know, post-publication, and also because, like you were saying, that we don't have to dive into just the context of the world right now, is that the truth itself is subjective. I mean, there are
right.
certain, I guess, absolute truths, but as far as individual experiences, we're all informed, like our conversation that we're having right now, we could have two different takes on what we
That's
talked
right.
about. And so
That's right.
it's just so fascinating to me. And so this memoir is my truth, and it's
right.
my experience and like my journey through this type of relationship, but it is just a fascinating topic, you know, everyone's truth is different. And so I
right.
think that someone can use that to their advantage. And that's definitely, I was caught just trying to figure out what was real and what was not real for a really long time. And my ex-husband did a really masterful job at kind of keeping me a little bit confused and like on my toes as far as what was my reality.
Right. Well, you know, it's so funny. I teach memoir writing. It's really one of my favorite things to teach. And one of the first things I have to tell my students, although your case is slightly different, but not that much different, which is you kind of have to
yeah.
give up on the concept of journalistic academic truth when you're telling a memoir. Mm-hmm. It's much more about a felt experience. You have to accept mm-hmm. that, like, just like you said, like if I get into an argument with my wife and we get the end of the argument, we want to kind of rehash, how did we get here? How did this happen? We go back. Both of us can sometimes have different memories of the last 15 minutes, even, about
right.
what was said and what wasn't said. And who knows what was for the case, you know, 5 or 10 years ago. So it's tough, but for writers, you kind of have to give up on one idea of the truth.
Yeah,
you know, the
no, that's so true.
Almost, you know, even in your
case.
And
I think also, yeah, and I just, hearing you say that, I think also what kind of like saved the memoir in some senses is that I was writing so close to the events and I was still
right.
deeply in love with my ex-husband at the time. And
really?
Just that
you're writing it
from, I mean, yes, I was still totally
oh my
in
God,
love
it's
with
a
him,
miracle.
But also grieving. But I think that if I had more perspective, I couldn't have written it, you know, like it would have just come
okay.
out as this really awful, scathing, whatever,
right.
Revenge, breakup story or something like that. But because I was just
yeah.
actually still in love and really didn't set out to actually write a memoir, just wanted to put it on paper, it was more like figuring out what was happening than
right.
Really having any like a bird's eye view, which I think sometimes it's great to get that perspective. But in my case, I'm really glad that I wrote it down almost while it was happening, because
right.
I just want the reader to understand what it was like to kind of go through that relationship with me.
Right. Well, you did that, boy. And you know, what's interesting, I thought about this because I had this one student and I'm fascinated by the memoir, both in terms of a art form, but also in terms of how it makes us look at life and look at ourselves and look at our role in our lives and so on. And I had this woman, and she said, okay, I said, it was first day of class. I said, what are you going to write about? She said, I want to write about what it's like to be married to a psychopath. That's what she said. And I said, oh, okay, fine. And so he had this marriage, this man with two families, you know, her and someone else, and he had this elaborate lies going on. I was like, oh, wow, this is
right.
really compelling. And I said, okay, this is
yeah.
fine. I said, but you got to write, give me a scene now where you show how you fell in love with him. And she says, what are you talking about? I said, well, you married a psychopath. How does that happen? Like, how does a person fall for someone? Because not everybody would have.
Right.
And she says, well, he was just cute.
Right.
I don't know. And she never came back to class. And so the reason I mention that, because she wasn't going to get into that. The reason I mention is I was so happy to see how you, towards the end of the book, got
yeah.
into sort of
yeah.
how you were a good
yeah.
target, so to speak. Because not everybody
right.
would have been. Not
yeah.
to blame you, but you had your stuff.
No,
you were
no.
with,
that was
right?
that was the part, like, absolutely, that's what set me free at the end was fine.
Right.
And that was the very last part of it, really, the whole, I guess, grieving process, you can say, was turning inward. And I think a lot of people get stuck on that part because that's the scariest part, is to kind of,
yep.
you know, face
yep.
your own demons, so to speak. And for me, it was really figuring out, why did I filter out so much data and kind of overlay the story that I wanted, this fairy tale, you know, love
right.
story that I just
right.
wanted so desperately to believe in, that I kind of filtered out the bad stuff and fit it to my paradigm. And you know, why was I, vulnerable, or why was that so seductive to me, that kind of fairy tale love story? And so doing that kind of work was by far more powerful or more liberating or whatever you want to call it, more healing than, you know, any of the revelations or lies that I found out about my husband. That
right.
was, I thought that knowing every single detail about, you know, the affair, the double life, was going to be the thing, like the piece of the puzzle that, you know, clicked into place, and then I would understand it would set me free. But what really ended up, you know, setting me free, so to speak, although it's obviously an ongoing process, like the more
sure.
now I feel that I know, the less I know, but anyway, was really like looking inward and realizing that one of my kind of like deeply embedded, like false constructs was that I placed all of my value, through the eyes of my partner. And
right.
that was how I kind of like validated myself and
right.
kind of tearing away those constructs and then like rebuilding my self-worth and my reality from the ground up was super terrifying. And, that's kind of like that's the end, almost like the end of the memoir, but really that work went far beyond that. I mean, I'm still
of course
doing
yeah.
that every day, but I really had no concept. I didn't know anything about this stuff. Like, I didn't know anything about boundaries and like disengaging from toxic people and trusting
right.
your intuition. All of that stuff I had kind of lost along the way, and so
now you see,
doing
he,
that, yeah,
he was a great teacher. He was a
yeah.
fantastic.
Yeah.
Just to bring up our president again, but one of the things about him that's interesting is that he has taught so many people about government and about the law and about
yeah.
democracy
yeah.
that we never would have known.
Yeah.
So anyway, but I want to take a moment to commend you on that. I want our listeners to hear what she said. So she really could have just played the victim card in this, and a lot of people would have sat by and said, "Of course you are. What a jerk.
Yeah.
Oh my God." And he was a jerk. But that's not the point. It was
right.
You didn't allow it to stay there. And the real power came from understanding your role in that
yep.
experience. And if you left and as so many people would have let you just be the victim and let that be the end of it. But there's no story there.
Yeah.
There's no healing.
Yeah,
there's no strength. There's nothing.
Right. And there's nowhere to go from there because it's
no.
so terrifying to think, oh, this just happened. There's nothing that could have been done. There's nothing to prevent it in the future. It's just he went from being amazing and perfect to, you know, a psychopath overnight. Like
right.
for me, that's much more scary than kind of figuring out, okay, how did this all happen? What were the signs at the beginning? What about myself was drawn to someone like that? And, you know, what about me made me a good target for someone like
right.
that? And so that was definitely the scariest of the part of the whole thing.
Yeah. Oh,
but
man.
So
yep.
so important to do that. And I think when other I get so many messages now from mostly women, but some men too, who
sure.
have had similar relationships, and I kind of always try to nudge them in that direction if like they're still in it or if they're stuck and it's been years and years. I kind of try to nudge them in that direction, but you really have to be ready, and you really have to, I mean, for me, my therapist played a huge role because she
right.
kind
yeah.
of instinctively knew, I think, that we had to kind of rebuild my foundation before she could start poking holes in these like
right.
false, you know, walls that I had built up. And so we did that foundational work for a long time before she started being like, so why do you think you filter out anything that's bad? And I was like, oh, my God. And it was like a stress panic attack for a while. But that's
right.
kind of the work that you have to do. And it's not even just in relationships. Like, that goes for so many
everything.
Different aspects of life.
Everything. You know,
yeah.
it's funny. I teach like personal essay memoir. That's what I write. That's what I do. And I've come to understand that depth, if you want to go deep, the only way to go deep is to understand your role in your experiences. That's where depth is.
Mm.
And if you think about it, like you're alive, you are life, right? As much as the whales and the oceans, you're life. And you will never know life more intimately than through your own body, your own mind, your own feelings. So if you really want to know life, know thyself, right? Go in and understand how you affected it. It's, there's no end to that question. And I just keep probing it and probing it and probing it. And I wasn't married to a psychopath, but I have to answer those same questions over and over and over again. It's the whole deal. It's the whole deal. So he was, you know, it's funny. I interviewed a memoirist who said, she was the first one to use this language with me. She said, the worst thing that happened to me was Beverly D'Onofrio. That's right. Beverly D'Onofrio, she said. The worst thing that happened to me is the best thing that happened to me. That's the, she's written like three memoirs, and it's always the worst thing is the best thing. The worst thing is the best thing. And that really
because
was true
for you.
It's always
that, I mean, it's really that cheesy expression or whatever. The lesson that you need to learn is, you know, often presented to you, and you can kind of choose to learn it and move on, or you can keep, you know, learning that lesson over and over again, because if
that's
you don't
right.
learn it, the universe will keep putting it in your path over and over again. So
you would have found another, I don't know what his actual name is, but you would have found another, probably not another psychopath, but you would have been cheated on again. Probably there would have been another guy done the same thing.
Yes.
You know, you'd have just found it. You know,
I think that's when really bad, you know, patterns can start, is when instead of doing that, like, deep inner really terrifying work, you kind of just go to the next either person or, like, you know, drink or drugs or whatever. That's when when really bad patterns can start to emerge. Not that it's bad to have a few drinks, because I definitely like was having wine during those months.
I'm sure.
You know, a couple glasses a night, but
sometimes
it's necessary.
So this book, we were talking a little bit about this beforehand, did very well, but it was a first-time memoir. You weren't a well-known person, but the story took off and it did really well. And I have a couple theories about why that is. You really told a story and you told it well.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to have time to get into it, but you did a great thing with flashing back and forth from working from the past.
Yeah.
You worked with before that email, and you would tell the story before, and then you tell after. So you were kind of flashing back and forth. Very compelling way to tell the story. I thought that worked really well. But it struck me reading it, because it was, you know, but there's a lot of good stories. And I thought, why is this doing so well? And I thought, I think, and you kind of answered it at the end, there's a lot, I think that your story is, I think there's a lot of women in particular, who are living through some version of this story.
Mm-hmm.
A lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect you heard from them or are hearing from them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if not, you know, with a bona fide psychopath, I think everyone probably on the planet, male and female, can relate to a betrayal or, you
mm-hmm.
know, having that kind of toxic person in their life, whether it be a romantic partner or a family member or a friend that they, for whatever reason, like, can't disengage from, and it's just a familiarity thing. And I have gotten, at this point, I mean, hundreds, if not thousands of messages from other women who have had similar relationships and honestly, oftentimes much more extreme than mine. And
violent
so like,
stuff.
I kind of, mind blowing in every way. The details of some of their stories are just absolutely insane. And so I kind of always try to say, like, I don't have the most extreme story, and that's not really the point. You know, there's nothing that ends in murder or anything like that. But I think that what makes the story unique is just that I was almost writing it while it was happening. And so it does read more like a novel, like fiction. I actually get messages from people saying that they thought it was fiction until the very end, when I start listing off the acknowledgments and they're like, wait, what?
Even though the word memoir is in the title.
I know. You would be surprised by how many messages I get from people who thought it was fiction until the very end.
Right.
I kind of wonder the same thing, because even though I was very, like, compelled to, so I wrote it really, really quickly. I felt it wrote itself. It was honestly this kind of crazy out-of-body experience, and I felt like there was something just compelling me to share it. But I queried a bunch of literary agents and got lots of rejections. And like you said, I wasn't well-known at all. I mean, I'm just a person who, like, wrote a memoir, and so that doesn't usually work very well unless it's, you know, this absolutely mind-blowing or, like, gorgeous literary thing. And so I just finally got an agent who really believed in it, but it was really just one agent. Like a lot of the other literary agents wanted a platform.
Jen, don't get me started on that. I mean, I have a platform and I write, so it's fine, but I just feel like you didn't have a platform, right? Obviously.
No. I had like 100 Instagram followers.
All right. So you are now in my arsenal of stories about why platform is not necessary for the memoir. But you found an agent.
Right.
Or he?
She wrote, it was a she, and she emailed me and said, I missed my subway stop reading your manuscript, and do you want to talk about representation? And then she also told me that in her 7 years of being an agent, I was the second person that she had signed out of the slush pile, which I didn't even know what that I was so ignorant about the publishing business. I didn't even know what a slush pile was, and so that's just when you cold query, basically. And then I mean, I had agents telling me, you know, oh, please get back to us when you have more of a platform, or let's turn this into like a self-help book and take some of them were really like really scared of legal things. Like, so there was really just one agent, Mersini, Stephanie Dace, who is at Carol Mann Agency in New York, and she just saw it exactly as I saw it, which basically like a psychological thriller. And that a lot of, and she hadn't been through anything similar. And that, I think that almost made it more, like for me, that was more almost like validating because she hadn't been through anything similar, but she just thought it was a really compelling read. And she thought that other women would probably relate to it.
All right. So listeners, because I get this a lot. Yes, it helps to have a platform because it does make your publisher's job like way easier. That's why they love the platform so much. But if you have a compelling story, you do have to find someone who understands that, but you don't have to have a platform. You don't have to. It's just not true. I don't buy it. I never have. I think it helps, but you don't have to. And you're yet more proof of that. But now, of course,
totally
it doesn't
agree.
Matter.
You can do it.
It can be done. Oh God, it drives me crazy. All right. Well, God bless you for that, Jen. You're a leader, not just to women who have been betrayed, but us writers, some of who don't have platforms. Well,
now
right,
I'm almost done with my second book, and it's a lot harder, just tell you.
I shouldn't even
mention it because it's so horrible that it's probably never going to get published, but it's fiction.
All right.
It's so hard.
Well, that's a whole different animal. That's a whole different
It
animal.
Is.
Well, tell
and
you
that's
what,
that's what
Jen,
I'm realizing.
Jen,
yes.
You publish that book, I'll have you back on the show. And you can tell us what that was like. See, here's the thing. With memoir, you start with everything and have to cut away stuff until you have something. And with fiction, you start with nothing and keep adding things until you have something. So it's the exact opposite.
It's so different.
All right. Well, I hope you find yourself a publisher. Fingers crossed for you.
Thank you.
This went very quickly. Now I have one more question, but before I even ask that, I want you did some publicity for. In fact, you were on the Today Show. Megyn Kelly interviewed you. Congratulations! Mm-hmm. So people can probably see that on YouTube or someplace similar, right? It probably exists out in the internets.
Yeah, I think it's on YouTube and the Today Show website. But if you just Google Jen Wait Megyn Kelly, not that I've done that several times, but it will definitely pop right up.
Okay, so there's that. But are you done with the book tour on the paper, on the trade paperback release?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've really almost just been doing more of a virtual book tour. Other than the Today Show, I haven't actually gone anywhere to do signings. More just a virtual book tour so far.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So my last question for you, Jen, and it's this. I want you to finish this question. If writing has taught you anything, it's taught you what?
Oh, it's taught me that I can heal myself through writing, and everything else that happens is icing on the cake.
Wow. Oh, I like it. And it's true. It's true. Oh, love heals everything. It's true. And writing is an act of love. Well, Jen, it was great to meet you. I hope
you
give your little girl a kiss on the head for us all. And
I will.
Good luck with the next book.
Thank you. Thank you for such wonderful questions. It felt like we were just talking for like 5 minutes, so I can't believe it's over.
I know. It's all too short. Well, that's what happens when you're having fun, Jen. All right. Well, take it easy.
Thanks.
Well, yes, it can heal. So listen, I do these shows to teach. That's why I like to have conversations, but I hope they teach people, help people. I want to help people. And I think these conversations can. So the best way, if you like this show, if you enjoyed it, give it a good rating on iTunes. Yes, that way other people can find it and they can be helped as well. It's true. I will be back next week talking to Riley Sager. Until then, go do something you love with someone you love.